case, the United States v. Moore. Ms. Gambino.
I was going to say good morning. I think we still have 2 minutes
barely
left. Judge Flom, Judge Wood, and Judge Tinder. I am here on behalf of Roderick Moore this morning asking the court to revisit the cases of Lawrence and Chandler, which have long upheld the constitutionality of 21 United States Code 841. We are asking you to do this because based on the last 16 years now of evidence that's been put together by the Sentencing Commission, it's clear to everyone that there no longer is a rational basis for the disparity in treatment and the penalties between crack cocaine and powder cocaine.
Now, this must have been a tough argument for you to make in front of Judge Castillo, because I can think of few people in the universe, actually, who know more about A, the guidelines, and B, the crack powder distinction in the guidelines than Judge Castillo. And obviously, as this case has been proceeding, it's been a moving target for you.
Right.
We've had guidelines changes. We've had statutory changes. We've had a lot of things. But Judge Castillo, in the final analysis, says, you know, that there are lots of things to think about, and it's not completely irrational to think that there should still be some level of distinction. He doesn't actually apply the old 100 to 1. He takes it down to a 10 to 1 for you in this case.
Yes, what he actually did in sentencing is to take it down to 10 to 1, and he did say specifically he thought there were problems with addiction.
Which is the exercise of discretion that we all know he, first among others, that the Supreme Court has recognized, that the district courts have. So I guess, sympathetic as many of us may be to the idea that maybe Congress should have gone all the way, why isn't this a system at this point where the district judges have plenty of discretion in a given case to go to a 1-to-1 if they think that's right, but they also compute the guidelines and then they apply their 3553A factors, and at the end of the day, it's enough discretion to craft a sentence that's appropriate for an individual?
Well, the problem, Your Honor, is that it's not simply a guidelines issue, and the problem and the reason why we're challenging the validity of the statute is that no matter how much discretion a judge exercises, in Mr. Moore's case, for example, he did the best he could for Mr. Moore, and took him down to the mandatory minimum of 10 years. However, if the law made sense and there were no difference in disparity, he could have taken him to a sentence that was less than that. And
well,
so,
how does that? Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, we're assuming that in some other world we don't live in, Congress would have chosen to lower the mandatory minimum for crack as opposed to find some middle ground for powder and crack. I mean, we just don't know what that world looks like. And we've already said, of course, that the Fair Sentencing Act isn't retroactive, rightly or wrongly, but that's what we've said.
Which is why we go back to the initial question that I posed. If you had said that it was retroactive, then I would certainly have less compulsion to argue the constitutionality of the statute. But what we are left with is that there is something that you can do. I know Judge Evans in the decision says that it would have better named than not quite as fair as it could be Sentencing Act, and says there's nothing we can do about that. But there is something that you can do about that, because the fact of the matter is we still have not properly addressed the constitutional issue in light of all the changes that have happened since you first addressed it back in 1991 and 1993.
My question is, how does this get you to a dismissal of the indictment? Isn't the best case your argument ends up with is an unconstitutional penalty? Not the crime is still the same, at least the same as powder cocaine.
Well, the crime would still be the same, that's true, but then you would have to make a finding first that the penalties are unconstitutional, and second that you could separate the penalties from the crime and preserve the statute in that form.
It's hard to see what would be unequal protection in penalizing crack distribution as opposed to powder distribution. I don't see how that's unequal.
The penalties are the crux of the problem. But the first issue is whether they're constitutional or they're not. If you find that they're not, then the question becomes, do you separate the statute and say, okay, we're going to find that this section is unconstitutional and divide it and let the statute stand, or send it back wholesale? In either case, Mr. Moore would have been improperly charged.
I guess I can understand your argument insofar as you would be asserting that he would be improperly penalized. Just don't see how it would be an improper charge.
Well,
it's a strange assumption about severability when the statute itself has subsections and A is the crime and B are the penalties.
Well, I'm not presuming what you would do. I'm asking that you find first, that Section B is unconstitutional, in which case...
And B, which is entitled penalties.
Right.
And I guess I had the same question as Judge Tinder about why that taints the indictment as opposed to something further downstream.
Well, it taints the indictment in the sense that you have a due process issue of notice. And so when you are charged with a crime, you are entitled to notice of not only what the conduct is you're being held responsible for, but what the penalties are if you violate the law. And it's a little bit unusual to have a statute with no penalties. So certainly there is a problem with being charged with a crime for which you don't have penalties.
Doesn't that work in the firearms statutes as the same way, something like that, the 920...
I don't think that there. I can't give you an example of a crime for which the penalty is not known. And certainly with respect to the range and the mandatory minimum and the...
But the range is known. The
range is known. But if you find the penalties are unconstitutional, then you take away the range as well.
How do we reach this under rational basis review? Since there is, I think, a plausible argument for a view of crack versus powder.
Well, I think you would have to make that finding, and it hasn't been made. And certainly the evidence that's been presented to the courts through the Sentencing Commission suggests that all of the original reasons upon which that finding was based are not supported by empirical evidence. And at least, if not completely supported by they're either not supported at all by empirical evidence, or the dangers or fears that were the concerns that underlay the initial penalties simply are not justified by the facts.
Well, but Ms. Gaiman, didn't the 07 report still suggest that there was a violence difference?
Actually, Your Honor, I believe it didn't. I believe what they said was that most drug offenses do not involve firearms.
No, but as I read it, violence continues to occur more often in crack cases than in powder cocaine, according to the report.
I believe that there...
I don't know if that's a sufficient basis for... Well, it's a basis that I suggested Congress could make some distinction.
And you're fundamentally making a substantive due process argument, I think, much more than an equal protection argument. You're just saying this is an ill-advised penalty for these crack offenses, and because the evidence doesn't support that crack is so dangerous and so on and so forth. It's not really equal protection so much. But substantive due process is an awful hard road to go down.
Well, it actually is both, Your Honor. If I could respond, I see I'm treading in
short.
Dangerous territory here. It's both, because first of all, one of the major problems that's been recognized by the Sentencing Commission is the disparate impact on African Americans of this disparity. And, you know, you sort of, with the analysis with Chandler, you have to look at that and then go back to the substantive due process and say, okay, there is this disparate impact, and because, I would argue, distinguishing Feeney, there is no basis for the continuing reaffirmance of the disparity, as there was in Feeney, because veterans could be both men and women, et cetera. You still have to go back to...
Even though they never were, actually.
Right.
I think the record in Feeney is pretty clear, but...
We could disagree with that as well. But if Feeney didn't even do it, certainly the crack cocaine disparity has even less basis than the veteran distinction does, apart from race. So it's a pretext for an invidious classification. And then with respect to understanding the substantive due process is a difficult burden to meet, you still have to have some rational basis or an articulated rational basis for the legislative purpose, and the Sentencing Commission has pretty clearly throughout its reports pointed out that the original reasons given in the legislative history simply don't hold up.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kimberly.
Thank you.
Mr. Bindi.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. All of the issues presented by this appeal have been decided by this court. The due process and equal protection issues have been rejected more than once. On all of the issues presented, there is no contrary circuit court authority. Turning to the severability of the definition of the crime and the establishment of the penalties, the constitutional arguments are that there's this disparity that is unconstitutional between the punishment scheme for crack and the punishment scheme for powder. If the disparity is unconstitutional, then the powder penalty scheme controls. There is still an offense here, and it is still punishable. So for these reasons, we respectfully request that this court affirm. Thank you.
Ms. Gambino, your time has expired, but if you need a moment for rebuttal to Mr. Bindi's remarks, you may have it.
Never say no to the opportunity to have the last word. I do think that it is definitely a situation that has not been addressed in the context of the change in knowledge over the last 16 years, and that the court... it is time for the court to take another look at those early decisions, Lawrence and Chandler.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Guerrero. Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.